truly a tremendous day to have been born in the USA. As we enter hour number two here on Jones and Keefe, WEEI 93.7, Boston Sports Original, as well as our fantastic affiliate networks. Dan Ball and John Lyons in for the guys here on this Memorial Day Monday, a day of relaxation, but more importantly, remembrance. And remember all of those and thank them for their sacrifices that they made here on this Memorial Day today and every day. John Lyons, we transition from the Boston Red Sox as they've drawn the ire of a number of our listeners, both on the text line and on the phone line, to the New England Patriots. And the sky did appear to be falling for Drake May come day two of OTAs this past week. As you saw the numbers floating around, this is not new news for anybody who listens to the station. Began the day 4 of 8, throwing 4 interceptions. Improved as the day went along, then was 7 of 8 to wrap up the day. And as Mike Reese of ESPN reported, looked a lot better and specifically turnover free when the team got back at it on Thursday. So my first question to tee up the conversation about Drake May before we expand to what we want to see in year two for the Patriots quarterback. Do you read anything into 4 of 8 with 4 interceptions during an OTA day like that?
Not a ton, especially okay. So early on. And I know that's been a big talking point around here, but realistically, it's a new offensive system. He's a second-year quarterback. He had a tough day against what we expect to be a good defense, right? Or a much-improved defense from last year, given all the talent they have and the money they've invested. Now, if we're sitting here in minicamp in June and he's having a couple days like that, then yeah, it's a problem. But when I'm down there, you know, covering training camp and he's doing that, then yeah, that's a big problem. Because yeah. I will say last year, that was my biggest criticism of him, was he threw 10 interceptions. He didn't play a full season, yet still threw 10 picks. He lost 4 fumbles. Like, that's 14 turnovers lost. That's a big problem. And he threw interceptions at really bad times. The end of the Rams game, the goal line against the Colts, the end of the Titans game in overtime. Like, those were key interceptions that played a role in the Patriots losing those games. And again, the Patriots are bad last year. I get it. I'm not saying, but my point is that when I look ahead for Drake May, the biggest thing I want him to do next year is limit turnovers. Like, that's got to be the biggest thing. And that being said, though, one day in OTAs where he goes 4 for 8 and one team, like, I'm not going to get that upset. Now, if it keeps happening, if it's a thing in minicamp, if it's a thing in training camp, then yeah, then that's a huge problem.
Let me see Drake May with Stephon Diggs for a little while before I can start really worrying about any numbers that I see. Because I know it's a pie-in-the-sky comparison when Drake May gets compared to the body of work of Josh Allen. But with Brian Daboll and Stephon Diggs, Allen was really able to cut down on those same kind of turnover issues. So to your point about year number two versus year one, the excuse list was long in year one. All right, well, first year offensive coordinator in this system, first year head coach, lots of rookies, a really inexperienced and not overly talented group of wide receivers around him, and chalk all that up to also being a rookie and figuring it out on the fly. All of those are excuses that I think carried some kind of weight. Now you've seen the wide receiving group improve, rookies, but also, quite honestly, more talented rookies, and then Diggs, Mac Hollins, two reliable guys into the mix. So that's one. Josh McDaniels is maybe the biggest thing to point to and go, well, this offense is supposed to be the cure-all for any quarterback that is in it. So as you look at Josh McDaniels installing his offense, what does that look like with Drake May operating it here in year two?
Yeah, I think the hire of Josh McDaniels is probably the second most important thing the Patriots did all offseason. Number one being hiring Mike Vrabel. And yep. And you could say Will Campbell's too. I'd maybe put him at three. But McDaniels in that top three conversation, because this is a guy in McDaniels that made Mac Jones look pretty good, right? Like, they were top 10 in scoring in Mac's rookie year. They were top 10 in scoring with Matt Cassel, if you want to go back to 08.
Right.
Because it's very easy to look at and say, oh, the Brady stuff, and they were with Brady. And, you know, he, by the way, 6 Super Bowl rings for Josh McDaniels, just like, you know, Brady and Bill here.
Interesting.
But
yeah,
take the Brady stuff to me out of it. Because
how old is Josh McDaniels' girlfriend?
I
also 24?
He's married. Older than 24. Yeah. But I think with Josh, take the Brady stuff out of it to me. And there was a lot of brilliance in there by McDaniels, right? Super Bowl 51, 53.
100%.
You know, that divisional game against the Ravens, all that, right? But that was with Brady and Gronkowski and all these guys. Look at what he did with Matt Cassel when that was a an offense that started out a little bit slow, and by the end of the year, Castle had back-to-back 400-yard passing games. You won 11 games, you're top 10 in scoring. Look at what he did with Mac Jones, right? Sixth in points, 10th in DVOA. But also, I mentioned that I wanted Drake May to limit the turnovers next year. That's the biggest thing I'm watching him. With Mac Jones' rookie year, they had the fourth fewest three and outs, right? They limited negative plays. They were 10th in the league on third downs. They were 7th in red zone. So those key situations, they performed pretty well. And I think Mac in his rookie had 13 interceptions, which was not a great number, but that was over the course of a full 17 games
right.
with a rookie. So I look at Josh and say, obviously I want this to be a much better offense. The first step, though, is can you get May to kind of limit those turnovers, play within the structure of it. And now you add in, you have two legit offensive tackles. Now, I'm not telling you they're elite, but you have legit offensive tackles. You actually have a legit receiver in Stephon Diggs. I mean, when was the last time, Dan, the Patriots offense had a skill player that a defense really had to worry about in game plan around? And maybe Gronk in 2018. You could maybe tell me Edelman in 2019.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
We're talking over half a decade since defensive coordinators really had to worry about somebody on the field.
And I know Diggs is not going to be the guy he was in Minnesota, the guy he was in Buffalo coming off that injury a little older. But at the very least, defenses have to think about it.
Yeah.
Like they have
to
worry about
it. The guy in Houston was, what was he, 7th in receptions but when he got hurt. And I know it's not you're not talking about large chunk plays, but to your point, that's still a guy who you know is going to catch the ball and make positive plays. And I think with McDaniels, with Diggs, with the work on the offensive line, and with May taking another step, the floor for the offense is a lot higher for what the absolute bare minimum for what they can accomplish.
And we're talking about a team that over the last 2 years had the worst offensive line in the NFL.
Yeah.
They had the worst skill position group. Now, again, we're not sitting here saying they're elite at those areas, but to your point, the floor should be much higher than it is, or than it was.
We'll get into the Mike Vrabel conversation in a little bit, because the defense and the culture and all those other cliches that you want to throw around with what Mike Vrabel brings is significant. So with all of those in mind, when we talk about Drake May in year number two, what is the high water mark for what you think he can accomplish this year?
So number one is, and I know I've said it already, but can you limit the turnovers? And you look at last year, May's numbers as a whole, I mean, 2,200 yards, 15 touchdowns. Like, he was not bad, and he was in a really bad situation. But they only won one game that he played the full game, and that was against Chicago, right? The Jets game, remember, he got hurt. Brissett came in and won you that game. The last game of the year, Joe Milton kindly won you that game and lost you the number one
real nice of him.
Overall
yeah.
pick. Yeah, very yep. kind of him to help you win that game.
Yeah.
So can he make those key plays late in games too? Like, that's what I want to see. I want to limit the turnovers, but I mentioned it. You throw an interception against the Rams on that final drive, a game that you potentially could have won. You throw an interception on the goal line against the Colts. You throw two interceptions against Tennessee, including one in overtime. And I get it. The coaching situation was terrible. The offensive line was terrible. He also made that great play against Tennessee to tie the game. I'm not taking that away from him. But can you execute at a high level in those crunch time situations? Not be 50-50 where you make the great play at the end of regulation against Tennessee and then throw the interception in overtime. Can you make both of those plays some weeks? And you're not going to do it every week, but can you make both of those? But like, that's what I want to see. Can you start making those plays more often than you mess them up? And that's going to be, to me, the difference between do they win 7 games or do they win 9 or 10? Because I think this team right now, their floor should be 7 to 8 wins. Can you get to 9 or 10? It's going to be, well, do you win those games, right? You have a softer schedule, but is there a game, let's say, against Atlanta where it's a close game late and you have a chance to win? Does May make the plays in those games? Because we haven't seen that from him. Right? And it's not all his fault. They were bad. But that Chicago game, I mean, their coach got fired 2 weeks later. Their offensive coordinator got fired like the next day after the game. Like, that was more about they were just awful. So we have not seen him make those plays. I want to see that.
I'm right there with you. 617-779-7937. I want the conversation of, is Drake May the starting quarterback of the New England Patriots, to end at very least. That's what I want to see him earn through a productive offseason. Let's see him as he gets into camp and as you talk about those different kind of marks along the calendar in the summer. Let's get that conversation to stop at very least, and then we get into the season and see where we go from there. So talking about the win total. Coming from a 4-win season, again, the bar is very low for what is considered to be a successful season. There are different elements that you've added throughout this offseason that should add metaphorical wins for 2025. The addition of Mike Vrabel in your mind adds you how many wins?
I think that adds you at least a couple right there.
Okay.
And, then I look at McDaniels, and I think May
so
is
coaching staff
be
as a whole, I guess.
I think that combination adds you maybe 2 to 3 more wins. Because you just look at some of the games they lost, and this goes deeper than just Josh McDaniels or Mike Vrabel. Like, defensively, I think their special teams was mostly good last year, and they kept Jeremy Springer around. But, I mean, you go back to some of those games, like that Thursday night game against the Jets, where it felt like they didn't even have a real game plan on either side of the ball. How about the game against the Colts? I know I mentioned May's interception, which, by the way, I think did hit off Hunter Henry's hands. But you go into that game, and they have a 19-play drive plus a 2-point conversion to end it. Or the Jaguars running the ball 18 straight times to close it. Like, those things, to me, will not happen with Mike Vrabel and will not happen with Terrell Williams, and especially won't happen with Robert Spillane and Milton Williams and now Carlton Davis. So, like, that's why I look at this and I say, their floor should be 7 wins. If May progresses and he can make some of those key plays, you know, down the stretch, that's where you can get to 9 wins, outside shot at 10 wins. Because I feel like that's been the big buzz around here is, can they win 9? Can they win 10? And your co-host Andy Hart has said they're the most overrated team, you know, in the league right now. And I think that, look, I think there's some merit to that, wherein we're talking about a team that's won 8 games in the last 2 years combined. They're on their 3rd head coach in 3 years. That's really bad. I think you take what they've added to this. Like, we haven't even mentioned Travion Henderson. We haven't really got into Will Campbell. Their floor should be 7. But if May can progress with Josh, then it's, can they get to 9? Maybe 10.
Yeah, I think the double-digit conversation, because people have been jumping anywhere from 7 to 13 on this team. Because there are, and I think that's why landing in that 7 to 8 win category is probably responsible for right now, because there are just so many unknowns. You've added adults, you've added veterans in multiple different spots in your roster, but now all those parts have to come together under a newly installed coaching staff with a second-year quarterback, and that's a lot of roster churn to then automatically be a 9-10 win team. I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest to see a 1-2 to 1-3 start as you put these pieces together with the shortened preseason that you have, and with just how much change you made with the amount of youth that you have on your offense and in different areas. But then come October, November, once you kind of get to that back half of the year, my best case scenario is, oh, we're seeing flashes of this team being a consistent playoff team in the second half of 2025. And then however
they
the
should
math
come
works
out of
out
their bye week in the playoff hunt.
Yeah.
Like, to me, if they don't come, and again, that could look like, you know, what's their bye week? Week 14 or whatever. So you could be, you know, 7-6. Like, I'm not sitting here saying you're going to be, you know, 10-2 in early, you know, November or whatever, but you should come out of your bye week in the playoff hunt at minimum.
Right.
And then we'll see after that, because you come out of your bye, you know, you have Buffalo, you have at Baltimore. That's not easy, but you should come out of your bye in the playoff hunt. And I think if you don't, that's a failure. And I think, to your point about the beginning of the year, I think you should be at least 2-2 in those 4 games.
Just based on the opponents?
Yeah, and
you
I
have?
Look at, like, the Raiders game. I think a lot of people are chalking that up as, like, a win, and I don't think that's necessarily going to be a win. I mean, Pete Carroll and Geno Smith are new there, but they've worked together before, so it's not a new head coach QB combo. That's Ashton Gentry's first game. You're going to have to game plan against that with a new defensive coordinator who, again, you'll be better than last year at defense. But still, like, that's a new defense. You got new guys. But Pittsburgh and Carolina, like, you don't know who Pittsburgh's quarterback is. Carolina was better down the stretch last year, but that's still a bad team. Like, you should come out of that stretch at least 2-2. So that's kind of where, like, my barometers for this season. Are you 2-2 at least through the first 4? And do you come out of your bye week as a playoff team? Because last year, to me, Jerod Mayo lost his job when you came out of the bye week and you looked as bad as you did against the Cardinals.
Right, right.
That's when it started, and then, of course, it got worse. But to me, that that was when the conversation was really like, oh, this guy might be one and done. And that's, so I want to see, can we see the opposite of that? Can you come out of your bye week in the playoff hunt and play well after your bye week?
All right, 617-779-7937. We do have to get to a break. I see your calls on the Patriots, so hang on for just a moment. We'll continue the conversation about what else is on John Lyons' radar coming out of OTAs, players he's most intrigued by, and what intrigues you the most with the Patriots. Before any of that, Tom Crisafulli will tell you what's trending. You know, it makes it really difficult, Tom, to talk on the radio when you're just playing patriotic bangers like this all Monday. But we'll take it here on Jones and Keith, Dan Ball and John Lyons. In for the guys here on this Monday. Thanks for being with us on May the 26th, 2025. Continuing our conversation on the New England Patriots, and Jake will start us off. Jake, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, boys. How are you doing?
Good, good. What's up?
Well, listen, I have two concerns. I mean, you guys are so overconfident on Drake May, and I'm also worried about Diggs. And mind you, this contract I'm not a fan of. His relationship with Cardi B, I think, could be a capital D distraction, if you know what I mean. But on Drake, I think there's a bigger picture here. Guy was very quick to go get engaged in the offseason. Did it the first weekend. Playoffs are still going on. He'll be married by the opener. Saw the footage from the engagement and the bachelorette party. Very, very tame, very safe, very wholesome. It's almost concerning how wholesome it is. Like, are you a killer? Are you a winner? They've been together since middle school. Can Drake May, like a Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, these great quarterbacks who put it all out on the line, could Drake May walk into a bar and walk home tonight, come home from crew tonight in Nantucket with a girl?
Okay, I don't want to know the answer to that question. Jake, thank you as always for the insights.
I think he could, and the fact that he chooses not to is not a problem.
Yeah. So that applies to his football acumen in a way maybe we'll figure out by one.
Stephon Diggs.
Okay.
We're all excited about Stephon Diggs. His yards per route run last year would have been number one on the Patriots, and he only played half the season.
Aren't you worried about his capital D distraction?
He would have had the second most first down catches on the Patriots, and again, he only played half a season.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to worry, and I know we've seen some photos of him working out, and it's exciting, but he's on the wrong side of 30. Does he come back week one, or does he come back Columbus Day? And if he comes back Columbus Day, does he take a few weeks to ramp up, and by then it's the middle of the season? And if he comes back week one, does that mean he rushed it and he's rusty early? Like, so I think the expectations for Stephon Diggs should not be, oh, he's going to be like he was, you know, in Buffalo, or he's going to be like he was in Minnesota.
Yeah.
The expectation should be he's going to be better than anybody you have and anybody you've had for a while. And I think part of that is on May, part of that is on McDaniels, to make sure, let's put him in situations, especially early on, where he's going to succeed, right? And that's where, as a second-year quarterback, how much of that can you put on May's shoulder? Like, you're going to put more on his shoulders than you did last year, but how much of that can you really put on him? And, you know, we had the 781 texters say, you know, don't frame May against the ghost of Tom Brady. We've done the exact opposite. We said, take Brady out of it. Look at the Matt Castle year and the Mac Jones year with McDaniels. It felt like over time, they put more and more and more and more and more on those guys' shoulders. And I think that's kind of the question, is how much do you put on May's shoulders, especially in relation to Diggs and him coming along? And the personality stuff with Diggs, I don't know how you feel, Dan. I'm not worried about that right now. And the reason I'm not worried about it is let's say he's a jerk, they'll cut him and no one else will sign him. So, you know, he doesn't have much choice. But also, if you go back and look, early on in Minnesota, I think he missed his first three or four games with an injury. After that, first year or two in Minnesota, things went really well. First year or two in Buffalo, things went well. Seemed like things were going well in Houston last year before. So early on, he's been good. It's year three or four in places, like that last year in Buffalo where he like skipped a mini camp day.
Right.
And, you know, one, I think the quarterback's saying it's not a big deal. The head coach is saying it's not a big deal, and the quarterback's saying it is. And you're like, uh-oh. But early on, he's been fine. So I'm not worried so much about the personality stuff like that. I'm worried, when does this dude come back, and how ready to go is he when he does come back?
Yeah, the personality thing this entire offseason was tremendously overblown. And I know that thing soured as it relates to his contract in Minnesota and then in Buffalo. And it was coming from working in New York. We were covering that Buffalo thing very, very intimately. And what happened was they made a change at the offensive coordinator position. They fired Ken Dorsey. They promoted Joe Brady to take over, and he completely changed the way that they were
distributing
running
the
football
way more.
They started
which
running
was better
it more
for the team,
and there was no true number one receiver. It was Diggs, but it was also Gabe Davis. It was Khalil Shakir really kind of became a focal point of that offense, and Josh Allen benefited from it. You saw the interceptions go down because he wasn't trying to force the ball to Stephon Diggs as much. The issue was Diggs didn't really seem to jive with the fact that he was no longer being treated like or racking up the stats of a true number one receiver. And so that kind of fell apart as now you're on his third different offensive coordinator, from Dable to Dorsey, then to Brady. So that was its own special situation. He then goes into Houston, and did we hear word one about him having any issues or Houston having issues
right?
with
him? Nico Collins got hurt, but prior to that, like, Diggs was the clear number two.
Yeah, yeah, and Tank Dell still got receptions. Like, there were plenty of guys that were getting love in that offense, and he still fit in exactly what you're saying, a reliable, shorter yardage, high-volume kind of target. I look at the body of work, and regardless of how many games you get, because maybe it's unfair to expect him to be ready for week one. I don't know. If he, for half the season or more, whatever you get from him is as reliable as he was in Houston, that is such a weapon for Drake May to have to avoid putting himself in some of those situations where he turned the ball over trying to force it last year.
And a guy like that helps your whole offense. Because like I mentioned before, where it's the first guy probably since Edelman in 2019 that a defense really has to worry about. No offense to Hunter Henry, but they really have to game plan around.
Yeah.
So now, if they're, especially early on, because they won't know, hey, is this guy still good? Is he falling off? If you're putting extra resources to Diggs, that will make things easier for Hunter Henry and DeMario Douglas and Ramondre Stevenson. We'll see how that receiver room shakes out, because who knows? Javon Baker, I don't think he's going to make the team. Kayshon Booty might not make the team. But a guy like Kyle Williams, who I think could legitimately produce as a rookie.
He's been getting a lot of love.
It makes things easier for a guy like that. So it's not like rookie Kyle Williams has to be this big dude and get a bunch of receptions. It's like, no, okay, you have Diggs. Now you have May in his second year. Like, it makes things easier for a player like that. And I think that is something, too, that I want to see in those first few games of Diggs, like, how do defenses really treat him? Because we, again, have not had that guy in 5-6 years now that a defense really has to sit there and be like, oh, wow, if we don't make sure we take care of him, he's going to get 9 catches for 115 yards, a touchdown, and we'll lose the game. They just haven't had that guy in a long time.
To stick on the wide receiver conversation for a moment, another name that seems to be complicating the puzzle in that room, in a good way for the Patriots, is a guy that I think profiles out as the consummate Josh McDaniels slot receiver. Unknown, undrafted, set records at the Division III level. Are you buying in on any of the hype on Efton Chisholm right now?
So, I mean, it's worth monitoring, and it's worth, like, I mean, is he the new Zach Sudfeld? If deep cut Patriots fans
that
remember that
deep
one.
Cut. Wow.
Yeah, but like, because you have that guy in DeMario Douglas, who is rookie year in Bill O'Brien's offense, which is not identical to Josh's, but very similar, had 43 catches and was really good in that offense. And that was with the ghost of Mac Jones playing and Bailey Zappi. Like, that's what, and he still was really productive as a rookie. So I think you already have that guy in Douglas. Like, so could, am I monitoring the situation? Yes. Am I going to keep an eye on it in training camp? Yes. I just think you already have that guy. And I wonder how a guy, too, not exactly the same guy, but how does a guy like Kendrick Bourne fit into that conversation? Because 800 yards receiving with Josh McDaniels in 2021, a career high, was on pace for another career high in 22 before he got hurt. Now he's a little bit older, but he's a good locker room guy. Or excuse me, 23, he was on pace for a career high, again, in this offense.
Yeah.
Because Matt Patricia hated him.
Of course.
Is that a guy that is on the outside looking in, or is barely the last guy in? Because the spots, like, Diggs is going to make the team. Kyle Williams is going to make the team. I think DeMario Douglas is definitely going to make the team. Out of Polk and Baker, one of those guys, I would be shocked if they moved on from both. Both were terrible last year. I would just be shocked if they moved on from both.
Yeah.
So that's four guys right there for, what, 6 spots? So then it's like, where does Kayshon Booty fit in? Where does Kendrick Bourne fit in? Where does Baker fit in? Where does Chisholm fit in? Like, where do these guys fit in? Like, your receiver room was awful last year. It's better now, but I think it's in a weird kind of spot where it is better, but I'm like, I don't know beyond like Diggs and Douglas exactly who's definitely going to be there.
To expand to talk a bit more about the offense, we hit on the quarterback, we hit on the wide receivers as we're talking Patriots, OTAs and offseason takeaways here on Jones and Keefe, Dan Ball and John Lyons. And for the guys here on this Monday, the running back room and Travion Henderson, who maybe out of every draft pick that the Patriots made this year got the most hype and bluster for what people think he could potentially be. The running back position was a source of great frustration on a team that was a source of great frustration with Ramondre Stevenson's continued inability to hang on to the football.
Seven fumbles, yep.
So now you have a glut of guys that do different. Thank you. Love a Joker Stig drop here. You have a group of guys, and you're kind of trying to put that position together on the fly. So have you been able to sort through the players you have in your running back room right now and how these guys may be deployed, as Stevenson is still a guy that's on a contract that would suggest that he's going to get the lion's share of the carries, but you have a lot of talent behind him right now?
I think Henderson's going to be the guy
okay.
that by December 1st is the fan favorite of all the rookies.
No kidding.
And I think I might be in the minority. I think Will Campbell is going to be a good tackle. Kyle Williams, I think, is going to be a little bit boom or bust. Like, he'll catch a couple big touchdown passes, but then he'll have quiet games. Henderson, especially his breakaway speed, he's going to be the guy that people are like, holy crap, this guy is a lot of fun. And let's not forget, this is a guy they targeted in the draft. Because I don't know if you watch Forged in Foxborough, but two separate trade offers they turned down for that pick to draft him.
Yeah.
They targeted this particular player. And they did that a few times, right? They traded up for Joshua Farmer later on as well. But this is a guy they legitimately targeted, and they want to be a big part of their offense. And, Dan, they have not had speed in their running back room in a long time. I mean, they tried to do it with Pierre Strong, fast guy, great athlete. He just barely could stay on the field because he wasn't good enough. Like, they haven't had a legit speed guy in a lot. I mean, James White was a quick, fast guy, but Henderson's long speed. I mean, look at that 75-yard touchdown against Oregon this year, and the one against Texas right before halftime on that screen pass. Like, when was the last time they had a running back that could do that?
Right.
So that, to me, he's going to be, I think, the second guy behind Stevenson. But the fact that he's a great pass blocker, and I know a lot of people don't care about that, but that's going to get him on the field on all three downs. And it would not surprise me, Dan, if by December 1st he's the fan favorite, and if by New Year's he's your starting running back.
That was going to be my question, is do you see the potential for a supplanting on the depth chart for him to be
your
number one guy?
You think it's a coincidence that they drafted this guy who never fumbled at Ohio State right after Stevenson led the NFL in fumbles for a running back?
Isn't that an interesting skill set to have?
And again, you obviously want ball security. That's not a coincidence to me.
No.
And again, I mentioned it, the pass blocking thing. I know a lot of people don't care about that, but that's going to get him on the field on first, second, and third down. And all he's going to have to do is show he can run pretty well between the tackles, because we know the outside speed's there. We know the pass catching's there. We know we can run outside. So if he shows that he can run in between the tackles at least relatively well, by the end of the year, I think he could be your starting running back.
And as much as maybe the pass blocking element of his game and the ball security aren't the sexiest parts that were getting fans excited when they were watching him in college, this all kind of comes full circle, because you're trying to maximize what your quarterback can do this year. And if you've surrounded him with players that are taking care of the football, that are good in protection, that are reliable, and in a lot of the cases a guy like Stephon Diggs is, then all of a sudden you've taken a lot of the variability of the offense away, to where unless Drake May's just making mistakes and that he's not going through his reads properly and he's throwing the ball around gunslinger style on his own, you've taken away this was the reason he turned it over. This was the way that we lost the game. This was the reason that your drive sucked. It puts a lot more known quantities around the quarterback. And going into his second year with a much improved scheme, I like the sound of all of those things on paper when they come together around Drake May.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting point, because I felt like last year, as I said before, turnovers were a huge problem. Some of that was him, and I think some of that was, there was, again, an interception that hit off Hunter Henry's hands against the Colts.
Yeah.
There was also, I think at times he was trying to do too much, because he's like, wow, what's going on around me?
And he wasn't helping himself, but he also wasn't being helped,
right,
if that makes sense.
He was in arguably the worst situation of all the rookie quarterbacks. Like, I mean, Penix in Atlanta was a much better situation. Obviously, Jaden Daniels in Washington was a better one. I guess Caleb Williams was the worst situation. May was probably the second worst situation of all the rookie quarterbacks.
Right.
And he was in a really tough spot. He had the worst offensive line in the league, pressure rate hanging around 45% or so, basically the entire season. So now are things going to be a little easier for him? And I think we got to expect he is still going to have some stupid turnovers this year, because he's a second-year quarterback and it's his first year in Josh McDaniels' offense. The key is, can he limit those? And can those other turnovers that came from Stevenson fumbling seven times or pass protection breaking down an offensive lineman getting smoked off the line of scrimmage, can those things be mitigated? And that's where, again, you go from, hey, they can win seven games to maybe they can win nine. Right? Like, to me, those are kind of the difference makers.
Just cleaning up some of the text, I did misspeak. Eastern Washington is FBS, not D3. Thank you to Matt in Rhode Island for cleaning that up. Hey, guys, after this draft and free agent signings, the Patriots will go 9-8. I like that positivity. And then, of course, just a ricochet shot, John, UNC will go 6-6.
As somebody who was down at UNC last month, I went to a practice and watched them. I think they'll be better than 6-6.
You think
I'm just
so?
Saying, I think they're going to be. They, not to go off on a tangent here, they remind me a little bit of SMU last year. Team that was good in the regular season, got to the ACC championship game and lost a close game, but then they got to the playoffs and it was like they were overmatched against Penn State. I could kind of see something like that. Now, they've lost some talent, and we'll see how long Bill stays there. I could see them, to me, again, maybe an 8-4-ish team this year, and then next year being really good.
How long do you think Bill's there? You bring that up.
Well, if they win 10 games this year, I think he's gone, and he's in the NFL. If they go 8-4, I think he stays there. And we'll see. And I think Jordan is also starting her MBA classes in the fall. I'm actually not fully kidding about that. I heard that. So I don't know if that's – I mean, people told me that when I was there. So maybe that makes him want to stick around, maybe not. But I think if they win 10 games, he'll go to – especially, like, if they win 10 games and some of these teams that chose, like the Cowboys and who chose other guys over him, those teams stink, then that'll open the door for him. But if they go 8-4 or worse – he'll just stay there.
So I'm going to poke this bear very briefly, and then we'll go to break. So all of this bluster that's going on around him, the ring cam gate and everything Pablo Torre
is
doing.
It is weird. I will not dispute that.
But you're not worried in the slightest about the impact this is going to have on his ability to coach now and moving forward.
I don't know, man. Like, I was at UN's, like I said, I was at that practice, and she was there on the sidelines.
I remember you calling into our show, absolutely.
Yeah, but I was there watching them, and I was like, all right, this team's going to be better than they were last year. Like, that was my biggest takeaway. I'm like, all right, they're going to be better. They're going to be better offensively. They're going to be better situation. Like, this is a team that, and I know Mac Brown's been chirping Bill a little bit, but I had people down there tell me, like, Mac Brown was kind of like this grandpa figure who's, a coach. Don't get me wrong, he was coaching, but it was a more relaxed environment, whereas now the standards are higher. That's just what people told me when I was down there. That's what I saw at practice. So, again, not disputing that other stuff is weird, like the CBS interview and all that. I'm not disputing that. I'm just telling you what I saw. I do think they'll be better than they were again. Are they going to get to the semifinal? No.
Yeah.
But are they going to be better than 6-7 that they were last year with a Fenway Bowl loss? Yeah, I think so.
Ah, the voice of reason, John Lines. Thank you for indulging me on that for just a moment, because that was a very cool trip that you made. Amidst everybody just kind of making things up and just putting together some social media speculations, you were actually boots on the ground.
Just as many whiny media members in North Carolina as in New England. So
really?
I found that out. Yeah.
Didn't think that was possible. 617-779-7937. Plenty more coming up here on this Monday. Jones and Keefe, WEEI. Back here on WEEI, Jones and Keefe, Dan Ball, John Lyons, and for the guys taking you up to Red Sox baseball, Red Sox and the Brewers, 1:10 pregame show with our guy Joe Weil, 2:10 first pitch, game one of a three-game series.
We've done something pretty impressive, Dan Ball, today.
Have we?
We've made some people miss Jones and Keefe.
Really? So
especially some of the texters, like, man, get rid of these guys. I'm just kidding. Jones and Keefe, great show.
That I did not know was possible. 617-779-7937 if you want to join the conversation. We're talking New England Patriots. And something that we kind of bandied about very briefly but didn't get into in full bore was the Patriots' definitely not propaganda piece known as Forged in Foxborough that they've been publishing on their YouTube page. What we got a peek into with so far the first few episodes of this series, which is extremely well done, and I make the joke, but it's well edited, and you can tell exactly what they're trying to accomplish. We get an inside peek, John, into the culture that is being rewritten by Mike Vrabel, the amount of accountability and responsibility it seems like he is bringing to the franchise, and it seems like he is asking in return. So you and I were talking during the break. You were boots on the ground for Patriots training camp during their one illustrious year with Gerard Mayo. So what we don't know right now is how things are going to operate, at least when we actually see it play out for the Patriots with Mike Vrabel and this new coaching staff. We don't actually know how that's going to translate in terms of wins and losses and play calling and attention to detail and all that. But it certainly seems from your perspective, watching how this team operated when they were putting it together under their new coaching staff last year, like there's a pretty significant gap between what you saw from them during the summer last year and what we've seen on display since Vrabel was hired.
Yeah, it felt like last year, Dan, there was a lot of instances where the left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing.
Oh,
like,
boy.
Remember, like, the Matt Judon temper tantrum in training camp, and then, you know, he's talking about Elliot Wolf, but then he's yelling at Jerod Mayo in camp, and it's just, and then Mayo saying that, you know, Drake May has played better than Jacoby Brissett, but Alex Van Pelt is saying Jacoby's playing well, that he's preventing May from starting. He was asked, what's preventing May from starting? And he said, Jacoby.
Oh,
like,
boy.
So it's like the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing, and it felt like they knew what they were doing when they drafted Drake May, but then it just felt like, okay, they trade down away from Ladd McConkey to pick Polk, which didn't, it felt kind of weird at the time, and then it obviously didn't work out. Whereas this year, it feels just much more coherent, right? Like, you go into free agency, we're going to address defense. You go into the draft, we're going to mostly address offense. A couple defenders in there, but mostly address. And it feels like, hopefully, a lot of those mistakes last year, they kept repeating. That's not going to happen this year. Like, they're going to make mistakes, and they're going to lose games. But last year, like, DK Metcalf has a 53-yard touchdown catch in week two, and a few weeks later, Deebo Samuel has a 50-yard touchdown, or not a 50-yard catch. And then a few weeks after that, Cooper Kupp has a 69-yard touchdown catch, all defensive miscommunications.
Right.
And it's like they kept repeating these mistakes. Or like Jalen Polk gets motioned into block, and he gets blown up, and then they kept doing it, and then he false starts. It's like all these little things, or and then there was play calling questions as well. Like, remember that swing pass in Buffalo inside your own 10-yard line that got blown? I call it the swing pass fiasco or whatever, because you know, that's really what it was, and it leads to points.
Swing pass, remove the P.
Yeah, it was, yeah, right, of course. And it felt like even Drake May, his first start wasn't planned. Like, if Jalen Polk gets his foot down against the Dolphins and you win that game, I don't think Drake May's starting the next week against Houston.
It didn't feel like much of anything was planned.
It felt like there wasn't consistent plans. The left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing. Whereas this year, again, it's early. It's just free agency. It's just the draft. It's just OTAs. But there is a much better feeling for me that the left hand knows what the right hand is doing. They're going to make mistakes, but I don't think they're going to repeat a bunch of mistakes, which was just a killer for them last year.
Let me try to distill down what you're saying about last year's team. There was no plan in terms of, this is Jerod Mayo's group, this is Alex Van Pelt's group, this is a group that we know what we're doing. The one overarching theme and plan was, well, we know what we don't want to be.
Wanted to be the anti-Bill.
We know what we're coming out of. We know what went wrong. We know that we're trying to distance ourselves from that. And that's all we're really going to base it on. And then you got to week one and, oh, blank, we actually do need to have a plan in place because we can't win 10 games just being the anti-Bill Belichick. So it seems like the difference that you're kind of outlining here is no plan except for the identity you're running from versus, hey, we have an identity that's being installed on the fly. Did you see that on display in the fourth?
It feels that way. And it feels like, obviously, like, Josh is an elite and experienced offensive coordinator, so you feel like he'll have that handled pretty well. And Terrell Williams is a first-year DC, but he's worked extensively with Vrabel before. They've had success together. He had success last year coaching the D-line in Detroit. Dan Campbell didn't want to lose him. Jeremy Springer, again, the Patriots missed some field goals last year. They had the one, I think, blocked against Seattle. So it wasn't perfect, but it felt like that was their best unit. And it got better as the year went on. So he's still back, and there's maybe some consistency there. And your personnel is better. Like, we can sit here and talk about the coaching all we want.
Yeah.
Now you have Carlton Davis opposite Christian Gonzalez. Like, that's a big deal. You have Milton Williams next to Christian Barmore. That's a big deal. You have two real NFL tackles. At least I hope so with Will Campbell.
Yeah,
but two
real
NFL tackles.
We'll see.
Whereas last year, you didn't.
Yeah.
And that was, and I mean, how many times did they have a different offensive line combination last year? Like, that was another big problem. So it feels like, to me, there's just a more coherent plan. And part of that is Vrabel's been a head coach before, and so is McDaniels. And I think that helps. And Elliot Wolf's in his second year running the personnel department, and Ryan Cowden's worked with Vrabel. But it just feels like there's a much more coherent plan. And that's why, again, we talked earlier, why is the floor higher? That's one of the big reasons.
All right, before we move on from the Patriots and break out the tissues so that John can memorialize his Boston Celtics and our guy Tom behind the glass can do the same, let's wrap up the Patriots conversation with Tim in Hanover. Good morning, Tim. How are you?
All right, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Dan, I think you're on your way to being a full-timer here soon. And you got John. I think you're a good combination, brothers.
Thanks,
Thank
Tim.
You,
much appreciated,
man.
I just want to say, I just want to talk about the pass. I just think, I'm hoping that Diggs winds up being the guy he could be, you know what I mean? Because he was a good receiver, but I just hopefully he doesn't mess with May and go the opposite way, you know, dysfunction type stuff or whatever. But I'm just thinking that they'll be a good team, maybe 7-8 games to win the season. If they hit 9, then they overachieve. But we got some good pieces. Hopefully McDaniels opens it up and gets the game that he used to have when he had Brady and all those other guys around. So we'll see what happens. You guys enjoyed this weekend.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate the call. And if you want to pass that beginning part along, that's ken.laird@odyssey.com.
Just ended the call right there. No, I'm just kidding, Tim. Just kidding, Tim. Look, I think what you should look at for this season, can Diggs be similar to the player he was in Houston, where he was the number two behind Nico Collins, but he was still really productive. And he would have been the best player on your team, right? So maybe he's not an elite guy in the NFL anymore. He might not even be a great player in the NFL anymore. But he would have been the best guy on your team last year. Can he be that? And can you come out of the bye week in the playoff hunt?
Yep.
And again, maybe you end the year with 7 wins, maybe you end it with 9, but can you be in that mix coming out of your bye week with 4 games to go? I think that, given all the money they've invested, given the new coaching staff and Vrabel's own experience getting a team to an AFC championship game before, that to me is what you should be looking for.
All the evidence in front of us would suggest that everything that you just said is very attainable in 2025, and that would certainly be a victory. All right, we'll take a break when we come back here on Jones and Keefe. The Celtics, they are out. The Knicks and the Pacers, they are still in. What can one suggest about the other? We'll dive into the NBA on the other side here on WEEI.